This show is brought to you by Acino Resources.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. It's August 20th, 2019. Well, gold is up, silver's up, stock market down a little, dollar down nominally. What is going on here? Well, we don't know, but perhaps you do. Email us with your thoughts, kl@carrielutz.com. Our good friend Bob Hoy is back with us again. We haven't talked to you lately, Bob, but man, these markets are really starting to get interesting, aren't they?
Oh, they have been indeed, Kerry. As you know, I'm the financial historian.
I know.
And got onto it decades ago, and there are very powerful patterns in the markets. And one of them is that when you're in a big financial bubble, like recently, 1929 or 1873, or you can go all the way back, to the first great bubble, the South Sea bubble in 1720. And for consistency, we stay in the senior currency in the senior markets, which was London more lately in New York. So, but the pattern is that with a great financial bubble, the real price of gold goes down because the action is over in real estate and commodities and industrial commodities and base metals and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
And so the last high for gold's deflated price was with the huge mania for precious metals that blew out in 2011. And our trick on that one was that we used the silver-gold ratio, because on every rally for precious metals, silver, as you know, outperforms. But when the daily RSI on the silver-gold ratio got up to 92, and we'd known ahead of time because we'd been using it for, oh, I don't know, maybe 15 years before that. The last time the silver-gold ratio, RSI, got up to 92 was in January 1980. So our view then in 2011 was, hey, this is dangerous territory. Probably be a bear market for the sector, but it won't be as bad as what followed 1980. But of course, Kerry, as you know, the bear market you're in is always the worst. So this then on gold's prices deflated by the CPI was likely to find the bottom as the financial bubble blew out. And our argument is that the stock side of the bubble more than likely concluded in early 2018 with the New York Stock Exchange composite set its high then, and a world composite index without U.S. stocks in it set its high in early 2018 as well. And with that, we've had the real price of gold bottoming. And it's moving up a little from a couple of lows a while ago. So we watch it very closely, and you're always a month behind on the thing because it's divided by the CPI. But it's done its thing. We've now had six great financial bubbles, and on each one in the last couple of years of the mania, gold's real price went down. Now, the other part of this, Kerry, is that base metal prices such as copper, and with the same correction for inflation, the real price of copper in the bubbles, and we've got copper's price back to 1830, I think it is. Anyways, there's consistency there. The base metals go up in real terms in a financial mania, and then they go down, and they have been going down. So we're getting set here for a very old-fashioned type of event. It's going to be a great bull market for the gold sector, but it won't be the old inflation story about the dollar going to wherever and gold going to 10,000. But what it will be is the real price going up. And again, we've traced this back through history. Is it's a proxy for profitability of gold miners. And if what they're getting paid for their gold production is improving relative to their costs, then it makes for a bull market. So for example, in 1929, with cost of mining going up because there was a bull market in base metals, Homestake didn't make any money, and it was the premier producer, and their rate of production was constant. So Homestake's earnings went down in the 1929 boom. And then with the price of gold still at $20.67 an ounce, the real price went up. And so that by the time you get to end of 1932, so it was well before Roosevelt started to fiddle around with the gold price, Homestake's earnings were up like something like 130%. And the stock was up in that order as well to the end of 1932. Mm-hmm. And that was with no change in the price of gold.
Yeah.
But a big change in profitability. And then, of course, it eventually became a very speculative market, because where you can see with the real price going up, profitability of operations improved. But also for an exploration property, the valuation improves. It's not an operation, but... So anyways, so you had a fabulous bull market for the gold stocks. You could have bought Homestake for $9 in 1931, and then it began to climb, and the high in the mid-30s was about $65 a share from a 9 level. And then the other one was that in those days, they didn't build assets out of companies. They just, gold miners just paid everything out by way of dividend. And through the mid-1930s, Homestake was paying $4 a share on a $9 purchase. Now that's making money. And also the exploration stocks, the juniors were flying like you wouldn't believe. It was absolutely fantastic market. So that's history. But in each of, well, there's been, since 1720, there's been 5 great bubbles and severe contractions. And on 4 out of 5 of them, the real price of gold went up in the senior currency terms, and you had great bull markets for the stocks. So I think this is quite likely. So where the gold bugs on the next strong rally for gold in U.S. dollar terms may start calling for 5,000 or 10,000 targets, I think that's kind of impractical. But when you understand how it works relative to the real price, you're going to have the equivalent of, say, gold going to 10,000 in the marketplace. And it doesn't matter whether the price in U.S. dollars changes or not. But where some traders will make money on an increase in the price of gold would be in outlying currencies where they actually go down relative to the U.S. dollar, which is the senior currency. So I should put in another note that, again, on these post-bubble contractions, the senior currency has become chronically strong against most things, because you're in a deflation, and most commodities and most other currencies for most of the time. And the reasoning that I was able to work out on how that worked was that during the mania, the financial mania, everybody borrowed money. Countries, almost countries, corporations, everything. And all you need to have done is to have most of the debt written out of the financial center, which is now New York. And that debt is typically due and payable in U.S. dollars into New York. So that represents one hell of a bid for the dollar. And it, and to my mind, explains why the senior currency becomes chronically strong in a post-bubble deflation, as a large part of it is due to people having to service their debt into U.S. dollars. They've got to sell copper or molybdenum or crude oil in order to get their hands on dollars in order to meet their obligations in New York. It's happened before when London was the senior currency. So yeah, I think it'll happen again here. So, the thing to watch for, of course, will be the trading opportunities. Now, on this recent rally, our last year, we were concerned, because remember in September, the gold sector had a hell of a whack down, and it generated our capitulations and sequential buys and stuff like that on gold itself, and also on some of the stocks. But I was concerned that there would be a liquidity crisis going into late in the year. So in looking at all of our tools, it was November 1st last year when we recommended to buy some gold stocks on weakness. And then there was one other downtick down to the middle of November. And then we've had this great rally. So now it's overbought. So the advice would be to take some money off the table if you're a trader, because again, this fall is likely to be another financial crisis. I think it's highly probable, Kerry. So
really think so?
We've had some technicals here that put out a big alert for us.
What do you think is going to trigger it?
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Be sure to take a look at Ross Beatty backed Osino Resources, a gold explorer in mining friendly Namibia. Osino's district scale land package is near two producing gold mines. Osino's management team previously developed and sold one of them to B2 Gold. Its founders and management are experienced mining professionals. In the past 7 years, they successfully developed and sold two companies. Osino's excellent shareholder base includes Ross Beatty owning 20%, insiders at 5%, and resource capital funds with 8%. Drills are turning, exploration is ongoing, so you'll definitely want to pay attention to Osino. It trades in New York under the ticker symbol OSILF and in Toronto under the ticker OSI. Find out more, go to osinoresources.com. That's osinoresources.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Carrie, the irony is incredible. And what was missing last August and September was nervousness in the stock market, whereby then people said, oh, the Fed will cut rates and that will be wonderful. Now, that wasn't there. But then as soon as it came out here, beginning three or four weeks ago, then that then is an alert that things are getting a little nervous. But the main thing that the Fed cut really perplexed a lot of market watchers. And for us, it wasn't, because the three-month Treasury bill reached its high in March and was heading down in yield and steeply it broke down. And so the way this works is with the senior central bank at the climax of a great bubble is behind the market. And I've just updated our work on that. If anybody wants to study, they should get in touch with us. But typically when the treasury bill rate is going up, although the street worries about rising rates, actually the rising treasury bill rate confirms that the boom is on. And what you want to watch for is when the T-bill rate turns down. Now, that's market force.
It's doing it. It's down to 160 now, right?
Yeah.
1.6.
Well, and actually, in 1929, the T-bill rate went up until May of 1929 and turned down. And as it turned down, it was saying the boom is over. And then the Fed didn't cut the discount rate until October. So what's that? 5 months, 6 months.
Right.
And so this time around, you've had a fabulous bubble, and the T-bill rate went up until March, and it turned down. And so for us, the explanation of why the Fed cut their discount rate so close to a market top and with unemployment numbers so good, the street couldn't figure that one out, economists or market letter writers. But for us, it was just plain, that's the way it works. And in order to look as if the Fed is in charge, the Fed had to lower their interest rate, so the Fed funds rate, but they only did a 25 basis point cut. Yeah,
not much.
But before, like a week and a half before they got before they did the cut, the T-bill yield was already down about 40 basis points. And then, of course, when they made the cut, the yield was down 50 basis points. So they're behind the market. So anyways, now then we get the other thing that goes on here is that pundits say, oh, the Fed cut is going to extend the bull market. But that's never happened. And I've got all the data here. And indeed, the worst, or let's put it this way, the fastest declines in T-bill rates, which force a decline in the Fed rate, have occurred in the worst parts of a bear market.
Mm-hmm.
So following 1929, the bill yield went down to almost 0%, and the Fed funds rate was down. I can't remember at the moment, but it did go down. So there were a number of Fed cuts, and that was the same thing in the 1873 bubble. The Bank of England's discount rate went from 9% in the boom to 2% in the bust. And it was the same thing. The equivalent of a T-bill rate or a bank rate led the market down in 1873. The reason, Kerry, I can cite this is that I spent the weekend updating all our numbers on it.
You mean you didn't know this off the top of your head?
And, well, I worked myself to exhaustion on it. And I'm just starting to put together a couple of quotes to go with it. There's a beautiful one from September 2007, and I haven't found it yet, but anyways, it was along the lines that the Fed will cut, and it'll be wonderful for the stock market. And we're getting this type of statement now. And this it's just empirically right there. Every bubble since 1873, the market rates of short-dated interest went up with the boom and turned down. And the senior central bank followed with its administered rate by around 5 to 6 months each time. So the street's fascination with trying to figure out what the Fed is going to do is utterly futile because the Fed is behind the market. So we can look around and find an explanation for why the Treasury bill rate would go down. And you have to start with why it went up is because with the speculative boom and the employment of leverage, there's a demand for short-term funds. And then the reason why it then stops going up is that perhaps the highest leverage people or the most savviest traders start to unwind leverage. And then you get the other half of that one is when the careful money gets concerned and gets out of whatever it's in. Now, that careful money will go to liquidity. It doesn't care about return. And the most liquid items are U.S. Treasury bills. And ironically, the world buying U.S. Treasury bills puts a bid in for the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other liquid item is gold. And that then puts the for gold. And so this is what we've been looking for, is it would be an increase in investment demand for gold that would drive the relative price up, and not the old game of the U.S. dollar crashing, which drives it up in that sort of way of calculating price. So this one, the bull market that's coming up, will be fundamentally sound based on improving profitability and all that sort of stuff. But if we've had this happen on five previous bubbles, quite similar to what it's doing now, hey, you got to be confident in that. So you were saying, well, what would trigger off a contraction? And I mentioned one lead is, of course, the treasury bill rate going down. And then the one that gets the most attention is kind of part of that, where you've had the yield curve invert, which is, of course, the curve is the difference between long-dated and shorter-dated treasuries. And that's a reliable sign, and it has inverted. A portion of the curve is inverted. And so now it hasn't reversed. It may be trying, but it hasn't reversed. Now, the other one in the credit markets that has been reliable is the credit spreads, which is the difference between high-grade and low-grade bonds. And we watch right. the CCC rated, which is just the
junk,
towards the junky end relative to treasuries. And it, of course, credit spreads narrow during a financial boom because people are confident and they're reaching for yield and mm-hmm. taking on risk. And then that begins to change. So in May, we had what we called the first breakout on a building reversal in the trend of hitherto of widening credit spreads. And then 2 weeks ago, we got the second breakout in widening spreads. And that was associated with then the whack to the stock market, which last week became a little oversold. So now what we would look for as further warnings would be further weakness in industrial commodities, i.e., you know, base metals and crude oil. And then the yield curve actually reversing to steepening. And I think that's highly probable because the other partner there, the credit spreads, they have reversed with accomplishing the two breakouts. So, and people, and we're seeing them, I've been actually collecting quotations here this morning on people saying that the stock market will be fine because the Fed is going to further lower the discount rate. But we know that empirically that doesn't work. So then you go back to true history, and every great financial bubble, and I've mentioned the five big ones since 1720, they all had their crashes in the fall, without exception.
Yeah.
And then there have been other many, many ordinary bull markets have had either massive corrections or bear markets in the fall. And the earliest one I could find of a financial catastrophe where you had the time of year was in 1345, 1346. And an Italian market historian, his last name is Cipolla, he wrote it up very thoroughly. And in northern Italy and the city-states of Florence, for example, they had quite a market in mortgages. Many, many investors were invested in mortgages. They didn't have a liquid stock market.
They had a Fannie Mae of their time with Freddie Mac. And I assume that they met with similar results, right?
So anyways, then there was quite a strain in the financial market. So the authorities said, okay, all these mortgages are now liquid. You can trade them and transfer them. And then the crash happened. And it took a few years to sort that one out. But there were the worst parts were in the fall. So wherever you've got evidence, it indicates that the biggest disasters have occurred in the fall of the year.
And that kind of makes sense.
So I'm really quite confident that with a couple of more alerts or triggers, and basically to me here is now just the yield curve reversing, and then the last gasp would be that sometimes you can have a seasonal high for crude oil, as we did last year in late September or early October. And last year, I think it was on October the 3rd. And then when it goes down, it takes the stock market with it. So that would be another one to watch. Now, the other part is seasonality, again, outside of a financial crisis, is that seasonality says that you're going to have a high for copper around March or maybe June, and you can have a serious low in November, December. And seasonality on crude oil is a probable low in December, January.
Hey, you know, you're talking about in the fall,
yeah, so
when markets collapse.
You've got hundreds of years of seasonality that say that if you're going to have a major liquidity crisis, it'd likely be in the fall. And then on ordinary business stuff, cycle stuff, you know that you can get seasonal lows for base metals and crude oil late in the year. So, and as we've watched over all these years, when industrial commodities are going up, it's good for the stock market. And when it's going down, it's not good. So you've got other things, Kerry, on the historical side here, where in the big setup on the financial bubble has been a world of inflation and soaring commodity prices and soaring CPI inflation. And then an important one blew out in 1920, and the CPI inflation in the U.S. got up to 22%. And then, of course, in 1980, the CPI inflation got up to 15%, and everybody went berserk on that. But the 1920, it got to 22%. And then the crash in 1929 in commodities was a horror show. So then through the 1920s, the Federal Reserve was very worried about pricing power and weak commodity prices. So the Federal Reserve was easier than it should have been, not understanding what financial bubbles can do. And here we have it over the last, well, until the economy became very strong since 2016. You had a stagnating, low-growth situation, and the key commodity year, the last peak in commodities was 2008, crude oil up to 147. So that then came down pretty hard, and through the last decade, most of the time, the Fed was concerned about poor pricing power and was concerned to get the CPI inflation rate up to 2%. So the Fed, within the last decade, has been doing what the Fed was doing in the 1920s.
Yeah,
now, there's a little more to this one. In previous bubbles, you had a big commodity peak in 1864, and then the stock bubble peak was 1873, 9 years. And the same with the South Sea bubble, big commodity peak in 1711, and then the stock bubble in 1720. But it's only since the 1920s that there has been a commodity index calculated and plotted on a monthly basis. So then you put that into your chart, and the overall, as I said, time span, 1864 to 1873, has been 9 years. But when you can get a little more precision in it, from 1920 to the peak in September of 1929 was 9 years and 5 months. So then if you look at the peak in commodities in June of 2008 and that very dynamic peak for the New York Stock Exchange composite in January of 2018, that works out to 9 years and 7 months, which is remarkable. I mean, it's your accuracy on plotting a commodity index. Is it early in the month, middle of the month, or late in the month? You know, or is it monthly average? So you're working with plus or minus. So the bubble ran remarkably the same time spread as previous one. And then it's even then, if you just take it the 9 years, hey, what the heck, that's pretty close. So this then adds to our confidence that what you've had with the S&P and the Dow Jones making highs since 2018 has been the world buying investment grade stocks, the big cap stocks, which are in those indexes. But if you take a look at the New York Stock Exchange comp, that high in January 2018 is still the high And with the overall stock market looking very vulnerable for this fall, I think that will turn out to be the high, in which case that spread from commodities to stock craziness worked out again. I'm writing that one up as well, too. So that's an interesting study.
Yeah.
So this is where it all works. And one might wonder what happens when the real price of gold goes up. And, of course, it's driven partly by careful investors going for the liquidity of gold. And so then the real price goes up and producers make more money, so they produce more. And juniors discover deposits, and eventually they go into production, so it increases production of gold. But in the financial mania, you've had an extraordinary increase in a credit boom of ordinary instruments, like stock, by bonds and debentures and treasury bills and things like that. But also you've had creative credit instruments, bizarre things, CODs and all this sort of stuff. So you have ordinary instruments of credit expand, and then fanciful ones expand, and then the contraction starts, and there's nothing anybody can do about it, because the problem in a post-bubble world is that interest rates go up not due to the threat of inflation, but the fact that there's so much debt out there, it can't be serviced. So then with the real interest rates going up, and you have then the credit just contracts. Stuff goes no bid, stuff's written off, and you have a horrendous credit contraction. But with the real price of gold going up, it's Mother Nature's way of getting liquidity into the banking system when the ordinary instruments of credit are disappearing. And to my mind, being the historian, Kerry, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, it's just incredible. So, and this we have ahead of us, but I'd be very careful over the next month or so. And we can leave you with a summary of what our call was in December, which was that you'd have sunshine in the financial markets through until about mid-year. And then August, we called it would turn to the sunshine, would turn to twilight. And then in the fall, it would be the twilight zone. Remember that?
Yeah.
Doody, 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 doo.
Yeah, right. I remember that quite well.
Yeah. So
Rod Serling.
Hey, we got a little, did we have sunshine to mid-year? Yep.
Yeah, we sure did.
Did we have some twilight in August? Yep. So I'm very convinced that we'll have the twilight zone being discovered maybe by late September.
Mm-hmm.
So folks should be taking a little money off the table in most of the hot games and building your own personal liquidity, because the liquidity is going to disappear. And of course, that's then where you get the bargains.
Mm-hmm.
And on a hit to the markets this fall, it'll unfortunately take gold stocks with it, but it'll be providing an opportunity to then really load up on the gold stocks there, where for a lengthy bull market. Like each of the previous post bubble contractions have lasted for about 20 years, and of course the usual 3 or 4 year business cycle prevails. But this is what we're looking for, is probably a 20 year bull market for the gold sector, which will be, there'll be so much money made in it, Kerry, it'll be staggering. And yet the mania in gold stocks actually is constructive to the financial world, because it starts to restore liquidity to the banking system, and the right kind of liquidity, gold. Some of the central bankers are increasing their gold reserves, and it is the right thing to do. But the central bankers that have been dominated by PhDs and modern portfolio theory that have been taking their reserves and even buying equities in it, the Bank of Japan is the most egregious on this one.
Yeah,
these guys are going to have a disaster on their hands. So, Kerry, it is going to be fascinating out there.
Yep, it's definitely going to be fascinating, and that was a fascinating talk, Bob. Hey, Bob, when we want to find your work, where's the best place to look you up?
Yeah,
on the web?
We go on to chartsandmarkets.com, but basically you can just get me Bob, B-O-B, Hoy, H-O-Y-E, .com, and it gets us right into the whole system. And I publish regularly on Thursdays, usually about a four-pager covering all of these markets that I've discussed. And then my colleague, Ross Clark, is a wizard in charting, and those are published on opportunities. So,
right.
Like, for example, where historically we're looking for the good times to shine until mid-year, and then things became overbought on our technical work. Some of our technical things, like upside exhaustions, that's a proprietary model, and that same model gives us downside capitulations at the bottom. So, yeah, it's easy to get in touch. Just Bob Hoy, B-O-B-H-O-Y-E.
All right.
.com.
Hey, we always love having you on, Bob. It's always interesting.
Gary.
Hey, we'll see what happens with all these dollars when nobody can pay them back. And the idea of rates going up after the credit bust makes total sense, because then risk valuation and evaluation in extending loans, loaning money, actually becomes a factor again. Kind of like subprime auto loans, subprime student loans, subprime housing loans, all of that stuff. And they eventually, it all comes home to roost. Hey, questions for Bob or myself? Email address kl@carrylutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz, Facebook page Financial Survival Network. Bob, thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
Indeed, we will. Lots of fun. Thanks, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.